This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Wednesday, the 12th of March. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. We start today's show with a speech by Action SA's parliamentary leader, Athol Trollope, made in the plenary session in National Assembly. Let's take a listen.
That we are having this debate today is a tragic legacy of 30 years of ill-considered and ill-fated choices made by this government. Churchill said about Britain's decision to sign the Munich Agreement in 1938, and I quote, "You've been given the choice between war and dishonor. You have chosen dishonor, now you will have war," close quote. The ANC have systematically chosen dishonor in their one-eyed international relations, and now we are going to suffer the consequences of these choices. Again, the fashionable acronym FAFO springs to mind. You've told Trump to leave us alone. One of your GNU ministers stood here and gave him the finger. Now we are alone. Now Lady Pandor did everything conceivable to insult, infuriate, and alienate the USA while she was the Minister of International Relations. Yet she was the first to encourage the government to send envoys as quickly as possible to try and salvage our relationship with the USA. Amazing. Nomvula Mokanyana infamously said, "When the rand falls, we'll pick it up." When are you going to pick up the rand? The president said, "I'd rather be seen as a weak president than split the ANC." Well done, you've achieved both. But look what your philosophy of putting the party first and the country second has bequeathed us. You will blame AfriForum and Solidaritate for Trump's punitive executive orders and possible repeal of AGOA. The scapegoating, though convenient, doesn't hold any water. Incidentally, who the hell do AfriForum, Solidaritate and the DA think they are anyway? Who granted them SA envoy status to go cap in hand to canvass for the protection of minority rights in the USA? Something that never existed for majorities before 1996. These protections in our Constitution and Bill of Rights far exceed the protections of minorities in the USA. A former leader of the opposition wrote this weekend that AfriForum has been peddling years-long racially divisive disinformation campaigns. Where are the real SA envoys? Javier Milei recently said at Davos, and I quote, "Argentina faced 100 years of systematic economic failure as a result of taking weak stances on major global conflicts and as a result of having closed ourselves off to trade. We lost practically all international significance. Argentina has been infected by socialism for too long, and that it would once again embrace the ideals of freedom, defense of life, liberty, and private property," close quote. The world has embraced Argentina's commitment to these ideals and as an example of fiscal responsibility to their collective advantage. Yet, you have chosen the exact opposite and wonder why we are facing global isolation, distrust, and unprecedented poverty. Milei also said, and I quote, "The only thing that socialism produces is poverty," close quote. Yet we steadfastly adhere to this failed philosophy. We have become so dependent on foreign aid from wherever we can get it that the termination of US aid and PEPFAR will have deadly consequences. You couldn't balance your budget 2 weeks ago, and now you've got an additional 8.7 billion rand for HIV AIDS program shortfall. Have your newfound international friends and the US enemies Iran that you were posing with this week and our BRICS partners offered any assistance? No, I thought not. Because they've been beating a path to the Oval Office to ingratiate themselves with the New World Order Tsar. And they aren't interested in our self-inflicted wounds. They will only compound our economic travails and poverty. It's time to reevaluate our so-called non-aligned stance, pick a side in the New
Honourable
World
Member,
Order,
your time
or face
is now
further
expired.
Calamity.
Thank you.
Trollope certainly stresses the disaster that is South Africa's foreign policy. Now, the BizNews 7 conference is currently underway in Humanus, and yesterday, Helen Ziller opened the conference And she had a lot to say about the new global order. We will be sharing that speech and a subsequent interview with you in time on biznews.tv. But I did manage to get an excerpt from her speech yesterday that relates directly to South Africa's international relations policy. Let's take a listen.
Trump has made it clear he is committed to preventing Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons at any cost. And this obviously creates a very flammable situation. In this extremely tense context, it would not have escaped Washington's attention that just as Trump issued his veiled warnings to Iran, the ANC was hosting an Iranian delegation at Luthuli House, headed by the Iranian ambassador to South Africa, Mansour Shakib Meir. Our own Nomvula Mokonyane, who chairs the International Relations Portfolio Committee in Parliament, hosted the delegation and announced that the ANC will maintain its ties with the Islamic Republic of Iran regardless of any sanctions imposed by the US. She said the meeting was about consolidating strategic relations between the ANC and Iran. Nothing to do with South Africa, the ANC and Iran. Now recall that South Africa exports just under 300 million worth of goods to Iran, compared to the almost 157 billion our country exports to the United States. Given these numbers and what is at stake for our country at this time, I kept asking myself whether the timing was just the ANC being clueless again, or whether they were deliberately poking the bear. It is worth mentioning that during the negotiations to set up the GNU, the ANC was obsessed with retaining the international relations portfolio, more so than any other. Let me tell you, there is far more that goes on behind the veil of that portfolio than is publicly acknowledged.
As I said, Helen Ziller's full speech will be made available on BizNews TV, and also her subsequent interview with Alec Hogg, the founder of BizNews. But bringing you more from the conference that is currently underway, Neil De Beer was also on stage with Chris Steyn, with BizNews' Chris Steyn, and she asked him specifically about his opinion of DA party leader John Steenhuisen and also John Steenhuisen's relationship with Cyril Ramaphosa. Let's take a listen.
I can give you some inside information. I spent a year in the multi-party charter that started off as the Moonshot Pact and then evolved into the multi-party charter. I spent a year working, which very few people probably know, as one of the leadership in that multi-party charter. We were eight parties, and it was brought together at that stage by the DA. And I spent a year working with John Steenhuisen and had the privilege to engage also Helen and the team that put this together. For 1 year, we were preparing, without doubt, to take government in the last election. We worked a year amongst each other, and it was not always a pleasure. But one thing we decided was that we would try to put politics behind us and formulate a coalition government in waiting. And it was not always easy. As Helen now refers to, it is not easy in coalition. It takes a lot to bite your tongue, especially if you're like me that has a black mamba curled up in my belly. I will net uitkom en spoeg. So you have to swallow it. And that's where I noticed, as a person that comes from intelligence, not IQ, but that can be a human profiler. I was trained to profile you and see when you lie and when you tell the truth. This is necessary when you are an intelligence operative. There are 18 ways I will share with you on WhatsApp om te sien of jy lieg of die waarheid praat. Someone said to me, why do you have a close relation with John Steenhuisen? Because he's not the greatest orator, he's not. And I said, you are wrong. I picked something up about him, which still today is now relevant in the relationship between John and Cyril. And what is it? This is my opinion. John is a good negotiator. John is a phenomenal negotiator at the table. He can get things across and he can make compromises work in a room. Doesn't that sound familiar on Cyril Ramaphosa? Also a good negotiator.
Neil de Beer is leader of the United Independent Movement. Staying with South African politics, Prince Mashele also took to the BizNews conference stage yesterday. He is a respected author and political analyst, and he's also executive director for politics and for the Center for Politics and Research, rather. He gave us some pointers on what to expect in South African politics at the overarching level.
We are now, for the next 15 years or so, 20 years, going to live in an open political field. Got to keep that in mind. The political field will remain open for a minimum of 15 years. What does that mean? It means that there will be no dominant party. There is no single party that is going to dominate South African politics for the next 15 years or so. 2029, no single party will cross the 51% mark. I'm sure Helen would like to, but I know they won't. The ANC in 2029, most probably it will cross the 30% mark going down. Why and how does the ANC cross the 30% mark going down? If you think I'm smoking dacha, it's legal, but by the way, just look at what the ANC has lost from 57 to what? To 40%. If the ANC were to lose that, where does it sit? It's not impossible for the ANC. It will cross the 50% mark, provided Jacob Zuma is still alive and he can stand behind a microphone and a camera and address a few MK rallies. The MK party will grow. But don't worry about the MK party. I'm not worried about it. Why? The minute Jacob Zuma drops dead, that's the end of that thing called MK party. He is the only glue that holds the thing together. And he's not very young. So it's not a sustainable project. But when history is written, it will be recorded that he actually hit the last coffin into the ANC. So a third point on the bigger picture is that we must get used to the idea and the reality of living in a country governed by coalition politics. Full stop.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
On the international front, it does appear that a peace deal is on the cards for Ukraine and Russia and is being firmly brokered by the United States. Our colleagues at Bloomberg have the latest.
Ukraine has agreed to it, and hopefully Russia will agree to it. We're going to meet with them later on today and tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be able to wipe out a deal. But I think the ceasefire is very important. If we can get Russia to do it, that'll be great.
U.S. Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff is due to travel to Moscow, where he is expected to meet President Putin this week. Bloomberg's Russia economy and government editor Greg Sullivan joins us now. Well, it was only a couple of days ago that President Trump was labeling President Zelensky as a dictator and someone who wasn't serious about peace. And here we are, the Ukraine delegation agreeing to the U.S. proposal to a 30-day truce and potentially to a longer ceasefire as well. How did this turnaround come about?
I know, it really is a bit of a whiplash here, quite a turnaround. But a lot of it is due to the fact that the White House was heaping pressure on Zelensky. After that disastrous White House meeting, they suspended aid, military aid, as well as intelligence sharing. The U.S. is a critical supporter of Ukraine, and they need that. So that was a very sensitive issue. Rubio showed up, the U.S. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, showed up saying that they were looking for concessions, looking for where Ukraine can make concessions. So an immense amount of pressure. But Ukraine also knew they had to show up and deliver something. They were looking to tamp down tensions with the White House and improve the situation. They were looking to engage. So they were incentivized to reach some
what
sort of
is
deal.
The likelihood Russia actually sign on to this deal now?
Well, that's the key question. And as Trump said, the ball is now in Russia's court. We know a few things. One is that the reaction from Russia so far has been rather muted. We'll know a lot more soon, as the U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff is expected to travel to Russia and meet with President Putin. So we might know more about their reaction from then. But this ceasefire deal that was agreed to between the U.S. and Ukraine does not meet any of Russia's previous demands or what they've staked out as conditions for some sort of truce.
Is it likely that we're going to start seeing more American pressure applied to Russia now that Ukraine have agreed to the deal?
It's entirely possible. Up until now, we've seen the pressure pretty much one-sided. It's been very heavy on Ukraine, whereas they have not been asking for concessions from Russia. But if Trump's stated goal of reaching a ceasefire fast is not met, then it's entirely possible he could start heaping pressure. The real question is, how does Russia react? And does Putin want to take this moment of opportunity to engage with Trump, or does he want to hold out for his maximalist demands? And that's something we'll be watching closely.
Yeah.
Staying with international news, Jonathan Wilkinson, Canada's Minister of Energy and Natural Resources, is concerned that tariffs between Canada and the U.S. are going to be harmful for both economies. Let's take a listen.
50% tariffs on aluminum and steel coming from Canada to the United States. What is your response?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think this tariff conversation is really unfortunate. You know, we've been long partners, friends, allies, our economic relationship has benefited both parties. So these tariffs are actually going to create pain on both sides of the border. I would say for Americans, we're already seeing domestic steel prices go up significantly as a result. And the United States only produces 20% of the aluminum it consumes. So you're tariffing things that you're going to have to import at a higher price. So to be honest with you, the economics around this are bad for both parties. And I think we got to get back to having a better conversation about how we work together.
This is in response to Ontario charging electric tariffs to basically the Northeast and some parts of the Midwest. Do you support that decision that they made?
Well, I mean, the United States and Canada, we are a federation, so we have state level and we have federal actors. We responded to President Trump's decision to move forward with tariffs with a very select group of products that we were actually looking to retaliate. And those were largely products that there are American firms that sell those products in Canada for which there are reasonable alternatives. We had not moved down the path of energy or critical minerals or any of those things, although we've said those tools are on the table down the road if we can't find a pathway out. Premier Ford is working in his own area of jurisdiction. He has been pretty forthright in terms of feeling pretty aggrieved about the imposition of tariffs. And I would say that he is acting within his sphere of authority. I think we all are desirous of not escalating this and finding ways to move away from this. So,
if I read between the politician lines, it feels like, no, you didn't like the escalation, but there's nothing you can actually do about it. What does that conversation evolve to be?
Well, I'm not sure I'd say exactly that. I understand Premier Ford's frustration. I mean, to be honest with you, all Canadians are feeling pretty shocked that Canada's being treated in a manner that is actually worse than China. I'm not sure exactly how Canada got into that position with a country that, you know, has always been a friend. So I think, you know, President Ford, Premier Ford and others are responding in a manner that shows their frustration. I think Premier Ford has been an enormously important actor and a constructive one for Canada. And so all I'm saying is different provinces can take different steps. And you've seen that even with liquors. There are some provinces mm-hmm. that have banned American liquor and some that actually have not.
And that will continue. The provinces will still have that authority to be able to implement. How do we calm this down right now?
Well, I think we need to try to find ways to get back to a conversation about how we create more benefit by working together. So I've been pitching this concept of a Critical Minerals Alliance, mm-hmm. which is really about a number of very specific projects that would allow us to help the United States with some of the needs it has, reduce dependence on China. China is our common adversary. But we'd do so in a manner that actually would create economic benefit on both sides of the border as a bit of an off-ramp away from this conversation about tariffs. I continue to pitch that. I met with Secretary Wright this morning, mm-hmm. and we had the conversation about that.
Is he receptive? Do you listen?
Well, he listened. He's a very smart guy. Okay. I mean, and he's actually somebody who knows Canada well. He used mm-hmm. to run a company that had operations in Canada. I think we're all desirous of finding a pathway back to a more constructive conversation, because at the end of the day, this is going to be lose-lose.
That brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more insights from the BizNews Conference 7 taking place in Hermanus, and we'll give you local and global context.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.